You know, my little writer friends, sometimes it's good to have a change of scene. So this week, the chaps are not just rambling, like blah, 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 but they're also rambling, like stomp, stomp, stomp. You know what I mean? Because let's be honest, it makes very little difference. Indoors, outdoors, they're perfectly capable of failing from anywhere. Welcome to the Failing Hikers Podcast.
Oh, God, this is so uncomfortable.
Come on, Tom, stop whinging.
The ruffles are really irritating my under chin.
Your under chin?
Yes, my under chin.
No, come on, we need to have them on for the song.
No one can even see.
Yeah, but look, if we don't have the ruffs and the tights and everything, then people all know, you know what I mean? We're not going to do as good a job. You know, we'll feel it in our souls if we do it properly.
Yep, our souls. I was thinking the same thing, mate. Look, stop messing around. Let's get going before someone actually
all
does
right.
See us.
Hang on. Here we go.
We are the wandering minstrels too, travelling the moorland looking for clues. We're scouring England searching for verse. We'll never give in till we've trekked the universe. Over river, over field, over dale, over bridge. Resolved to find the poems of Mr. Armitage. Whatever it takes, discover them we will. Unless they're at the top of a very big hill.
Hello, and welcome to an episode of the Failing Hikers Podcast.
Yes, it's true, because in today's episode, we've got something a little bit different for you, haven't we, Tom? Because
yeah.
This week, Tom and I, we're trekking into the wilds of the Pennine Moors in search of... Well, what are we in search of, Tom?
I don't know. Is it a pub?
No, Tom. Overall, what were we out there to discover? Come on.
Oh, right. You mean the actual point of what we're doing? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. There you go.
Poetry, I suppose,
yes.
Wasn't it? Some lovely, juicy, voluptuous poetry.
Yes, poetry. But why, though, Tom? Why?
Well, for National Poetry Day, we wanted to do an episode that celebrates one of our greatest living poets, our lauded and legendary poet laureate, Simon Armitage. And we thought, being as though it's probably a bit unlikely he will actually come on the podcast and talk to us, maybe we could get kind of, you know, psychologically closer to him by hiking up into the Yorkshire Moors to track down the remote and occasionally elusive stanza stones.
Yes.
So I don't know if listeners have heard of these, but it's six poems by Simon that have been carved into like massive rocks and then sort of strewn and scattered along a 47-mile route that traverses our neck of the woods, the Pennine watersheds.
Do you think maybe the way you said that implies that we actually did the full 47-mile walk, Tom?
Hoping we could just sort of skip over that quickly, to be honest, that people would assume we did without admitting we only found two of them, because on day one we turned back early and we did actually go to the pub.
Yeah, but it was a really hot day though,
so
I think people will forgive us.
Yeah, it was proper like, you know, thirsty weather, wasn't it?
Yeah, proper thirsty. Anyway, so that's what we did. We went in search of Simon's poems, and also I think we were kind of hoping that the inspiring combination of the moors and Simon's majestic words
and a couple of cheeky pints,
exactly, all of the above, might stimulate our own poetic wellsprings. And so we packed a couple of notebooks and pens and a microphone, and we headed off up into the unknown.
But whoa, hang on. Just
what?
Before we set off,
yeah.
Would it be fair to ask the question, why are we celebrating someone who's already, like, you know, massively celebrated?
Right. Yeah, fair enough, I guess.
Obviously, we're the failing writers, not being funny, but Simon Armitage seems to be, you know, doing all right, thank you very much. So really, this whole thing should be a bit more, I don't know, inclusive. So what about all the poets out there who aren't filling venues or selling thousands of poetry books and what have you? What about the poets who, despite their talent and hard work, aren't actually being celebrated? Hey, yeah? What about them, John? What about them?
Well, that is a very fair question, Tom.
I know. That's why I asked it.
So, well, let me answer it.
Please do.
I will.
Good.
It is good.
Well, we'll see.
You finished?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Good. Are you waiting for me to say something so that you can interrupt now, Tom?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not. No.
Well, the answer is...
You were just taking quite a while to answer, so, you know, didn't want to...
I knew you were going to do that.
It is true, though. Come on, spit it out, lad.
Okay, so look, yes, we are celebrating Simon Armitage, but here's the thing, right? You need heroes to inspire the next generation of heroes, don't you? And who better to inspire more poetry heroes than Mr. Simon Poet Laureate Armitage himself? But listen, we'll also be reading out our listeners' poems.
Ah, excellent.
Possible future poet laureates.
Unlikely, but
because we put a call out back in midsummer for people to send in their poems, loosely on the same theme, water, so that we will also be very much celebrating those too.
Well, that's okay then. Lovely.
Good. Well, I'm glad you're satisfied, mm-hmm. Tom.
Now we can start with the hiking stuff.
I've got a question for you, Tommy.
Are you recording?
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking. What about my answer might be?
No comment.
Do you think we're ever going to produce a book or something?
Well,
or do you think we're just the kind of people?
We're just skipping like from project to project and never quite.
Yeah. Do you think we're just those kind of people who don't ever quite finish anything off? Or do you think we will actually do it?
I think we possibly are. I don't want to, that's kind of why I wanted to start the podcast, because I don't want to be that kind of person.
Yeah.
It's funny because we're scared to finish stuff, because once you've finished it, then there's no escape from what's happened to it.
Yeah.
You can't go, well, if I'd have finished that one, that could have gone big, that. Like, when I have finished that one, and it's crap.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
I think we can do it, but at the same time, I'm also aware that we've been doing the podcast since, when did we start? 2021, April 2021.
A couple of years.
And I feel like that's enough time
to have done
to have created a book, or at least finished the first draft of a book or something.
Yeah.
Am I being overly harsh? Some people take years to do their first book, don't they?
Yeah. And I know personally I've done a lot more writing of stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
The number of short stories, that little play I wrote.
Yeah.
So regardless of quality.
A sitcom.
Quantity as in, I've tried to forget about that one, but yes. So I'm probably closer to what I should be doing, if you like.
Yeah. I think I am, definitely, compared to what I've been doing over the last few years.
But I think there is an element of us needing to finish something, produce something.
Yeah. Feels like we need to definitely stop doing like in-betweeny episodes for a bit. And concentrate on actually finishing some writing.
Maybe we do need to actually give ourselves some deadlines.
I think that would be good. It definitely works for me. I'm very good at tricking my brain into things. Because obviously we don't really need to fulfill a deadline, do we? For anything in particular.
That's the problem though, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the problem. As privileged, white, middle-class, middle-aged males.
Yeah.
The world's, you know, everything's on a plate for us. Isn't it?
Yes, Tom.
We don't need to write a book.
No. No, maybe that's it. It's the lack of need.
So we need to quit our jobs.
Yeah.
Sell everything. Give the money to charity.
Yeah.
Then write a book about it.
I've got to be honest, Tom, I've gone off that idea a bit since we said it. I think maybe I'll just try a bit harder to write more.
Yeah, it seems maybe a little bit extreme in the cold light of day, doesn't it? I think we're probably high on the endorphins at the time.
Yeah, probably.
Or maybe lack of oxygen at the height we'd climbed to.
Yeah, I don't think that's right. I think you've probably got to be higher than a big hill for that, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, it didn't take us long to get to the first stone on our list.
You can hear water. And we are now approaching the first of the Stanza stones.
Are we?
Yeah. I say the first, but it's actually the last, because strictly speaking, you're supposed to end with this. The official trail starts in Marsden, Simon Armitage's hometown, and heads north from there. But we're not the kind of people to do things the right way around, so. Up here, I believe.
Famous last words.
Oh, there's a helpful sign.
Stanza stones.
So what do you reckon, Tommy? Are we...
Near a pub.
Are we going to critique these?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
see what we think of Simon Armitage's poetry.
Know,
I think so. Yeah, we'll obviously be sending him a copy of this episode because he'll want to know what we think. One thing we should be careful of when we're going uphill like this
is talking.
is to not pant too much.
Yeah.
Because that could arouse our listeners.
Right.
And we don't want people sitting on the bus suddenly getting erections or whatever.
People, I wonder how long it'll take people to work out that this is just all cleverly edited and a soundscape we've put together. And this is just acting.
Not, yeah. Panting acting. A bit like that...
Oh, careful on that bit of path down there, John.
Oh, thank you. Mind that rock. Oh, look, Tommy, we're here. That's nice, isn't it? Look what they've done there. They've made it all flowy, yeah, wavy, like wavy the, writing.
Like the water, John.
Oh!
It's like the water.
Ah, oh, yeah.
So what's this one? What is this?
Beck, I believe.
Right.
Yeah, makes sense.
Studying a bit.
Do you want to give it a go, Tommy?
Yeah, go on then. It is all one chase, trace it back. The source might be nothing more than a teardrop squeezed from a curlew's eye. Then follow it down to the full-throated roar at its mouth. A dipper strolls the river, dressed for dinner in a white bib. The unbroken thread of the beck with its nose for the sea, all flux and flex, soft soaping a pebble for thousands of years. Or here, after hard rain, sawing the hillside in half with its chain. Or here, where water unbinds and hangs at the waterfall's face, and just for that one stretched white moment becomes lace.
I really wanted to say something
churlish and sarcastic.
Churlish and sarcastic, yeah, right. Yeah. But it's actually...
It's very good, isn't it?
It's really, really
and
good.
And it really does flow in the same way.
It does
And
flow.
Some of it rhymes as well. He's done well, hasn't he, with his rhymes? I mean, it's not like he couldn't change it. It's not like it's set in stone. It literally is a stone. Oh, I'm not going to do that joke at everyone we get to. Definitely not.
Do you know what he's really good at, Simon Armitage? Those, like, little half rhymes.
The bounce, like, bounce, it's like a skimming stone, isn't it?
Oh, that's nice.
Do you know how it just kind of, like,
but just
it just
the,
hits them, but bounces off
Yeah,
them.
A dipper strolls the river, dressed for dinner.
Yeah.
All of that kind of stuff. It's like, it's not too much, not overly heavy.
I am a big fan of
heavy.
A half rhyme.
Yeah.
Because I think it means I've crafted this, and it's meant to sound like this.
Yeah.
It's meant to be round and move.
That's it.
But it's not a cheap rhyme.
That's it. It makes it musical rather than like being slapped around the face by a poem.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, well, that one's quite good.
That is actually really good, isn't it?
Yeah.
What a lovely ending as well.
So this is the last one we've done?
We're done, yeah.
Finished. Oh, I mean, it was...
Pretty exhausting.
Yeah. Maybe you saved the best one to last then. Maybe the other ones aren't all that.
Let's hope so, because we need to give this guy some grief. Okay, let's continue.
Here's a question for you. Where did the whole stands of stones idea come from originally? Mm.
Well, you know who we should ask? We should ask the person who first sparked the idea.
Ah, you have got us an interview with Simon Armitage, you little beauty, John. That
I didn't mean Simon. I actually meant a lovely lady called Rachel Feldberg, who was the director of Ilkley Literature Festival back in 2010 when all of this was being hatched. I was going to say, let's ask her.
Yeah, well, that's just as good, if not better, John, to be honest. Didn't really want to talk to Simon anyway, so let's talk to Rachel about her involvement. Rachel Feldberg, welcome to the Failing Writers Stanza Stone special. Hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us.
Thank you for
It's very kind of you. So you were artistic director of Ilkley Literature Festival.
Yes, for 16 years until the end of 2018.
And so you were kind of instrumental in the creation of the Stanza Stones, is that fair to say?
Yes, and there is a wonderful story about how Stanza Stones came to be.
Ooh, excellent.
Which is, the Arts Council has sent around one of their many, many emails and directives, and like many artistic directors, I received any number of these, and generally speaking, you glanced at them for 2 minutes and set them aside to deal with it another time, and you can imagine what that really meant. And one night, 11:30, I was going through my emails, as you do, to try and catch up, and I saw there was an email from the Arts Council saying, oh, very exciting project for the Cultural Olympiad, called Artists Take the Lead. And I thought, damn, I should have looked at this. So I had a look. It looked really exciting. It said big pots of money for projects led by artists, which is great because often they're not led by artists.
Yeah, and often they're not pots of money either.
And often they're not pots of money. And it said the closing date was that day at midnight.
Oh, wow. 11:36.
And I thought, whoops, I should have been on this. And so I spent the next frantic 15 minutes thinking, what would be my dream project and who would be my dream artist?
There's nothing like a deadline, is there, to sharpen the thought process?
No, none of those midnight hours, you know.
Yeah.
So I thought about a project that I would really want to do. which would be about poetry and the landscape, inscribing poetry on the landscape. And also I wanted to do a big performance projecting poems that have been commissioned about the landscape onto the rocks at the Cow and Calf on Oakley Moor.
Oh, right.
Very, very non-invasive.
Mm.
And for longevity, I then wanted them carved into rocks. And in the proposal, you had to say, you didn't have to nominate the necessary exact artist you were going to work with, but you had to say an artist of this calibre. So I said, I would want to work on this project with Simon Armitage.
Mm.
At which point I thought, better drop Simon an email. So I dropped Simon an email by this time, you know, 10 to midnight, go, Simon, hi, I'm just putting in this application. I'm naming the artist I'd want to work with. It's not to say, obviously, that in any way you have to do this, but just so that you're aware, love to talk to you about this, and thought, poor Simon, it's the middle of the night, he's not going to get this, you know, I'm lucky he'll have time in 2 weeks to answer me. Within a day or so, back came Simon saying, this sounds great, let's talk about it. So that's how it began, which, talk about chance.
Wow.
You know what that reminds me of, John, that bit?
Yeah, was it when we were working as advertising copywriters and we'd panic because the client was coming in and we had to write something totally last minute, but it ended up being the best idea that anyone ever had in the history of mankind ever? Was it that?
That's exactly what I was thinking. How did you...
Well, because this episode is scripted, isn't it? So I just read a little bit ahead. So.
Oh, wow. Way to ruin the magic for the listener, mate. Just, you know.
I'm sorry. Just
right. Back to Rachel and...
Let's find out how the whole water theme came
right,
about.
John, seriously, stop reading my bits. Otherwise, we're probably going to fall out. All
okay.
Right?
Sorry, Tom. You are the best person ever, and I'm just a stupid turd phase. Did you write that bit in?
Yeah, I did. Sorry. Back to Rachel.
So, in the book about the development of the Stanza Stones, Simon mentions a cold church hall in late 2010, and that was kind of when the idea began to hatch.
That will be the meeting where Simon and I sat down to actually talk about the reality of what it could be.
What have we got? Right, hold on a minute. What have we actually got ourselves into here? Conversation.
Yes, and then we started talking about it and we developed it. And because Simon had just walked the Pennine Way, that was very much at the forefront of his mind. So that was really useful. And we talked about all sorts of wonderful ideas. At one stage, we were talking about a walk which went from Ilkley to the coast. And we were saying, wouldn't it be wonderful to have a poem carved into the sea wall in Filey or Scarborough, which was exposed when the tide went down. So we talked about lots and lots of different
There was a poetic Mount Rushmore idea as well, wasn't there? Like a gigantic, much larger scale project.
A gigantic one with Mount Rushmore. And there was also, we were both very keen on working with Anthony Gormley.
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Why wouldn't you be? Yeah.
In some way that, you know, didn't know what that might be. So we had lots of fantastic ideas. And then we put together, you know, a much more detailed proposal because the project got shortlisted. And that meant we obviously join all the dots for iMove, which was the Cultural Olympiad in Yorkshire and the Arts Council.
Yeah.
So we developed the proposal in much greater detail. And we also talked to lots of young people and made videos of them talking about poetry and how they would respond to the landscape.
And this might sound like a stupid question, and I've got an answer in my head for it, a very clear answer, but why Simon? Was it that quick? It was that obvious to you at the time? It was like, okay, I want Simon.
Yes, absolutely obvious to me, because the particular project, Artists Take the Lead, was about regional specificity.
Right,
for each area of the country. Yeah. So there were lots, you may remember, there were lots of these Artists Take the Leads project all over the country. There was a fantastic one in Coventry about Lady Godiva, and they had a large-scale puppet that walked to London.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
Different areas capitalised on their strengths. Ilkley Literature Festival has a very long relationship with poetry, you know, from events with Ted Hughes in the 1970s, from being opened by W.H. Auden at the original festival in 1973, to the work I did when I was director with poets from diverse communities. So poetry is a real strength of both the festival and Yorkshire. And if you're thinking about Yorkshire poets who could respond to landscape, then for me, Simon Armitage was, at that time, the obvious.
Did you ever imagine that he'd become Poet Laureate?
Yes. I mean, truthfully, it seems to be quite likely that one day he would be Poet Laureate. Yeah.
And whereabouts in the process did the idea of them being related to water come about?
Well, that was very much Simon. When we started, Simon was talking about writing sestinas, which It's great because you're writers, you'll know what a sustina is. But
oh, yeah. Yeah, explain it to John, though, just in case.
I didn't know what a sustina was, and Simon said, I'm thinking I might write a set of sustinas. And I was going, that sounds brilliant. I'm thinking, I've got to look that one up.
What is it?
Quickly Google that.
So you have six stanzas, and there are six end words of each verse. Each has six lines, and there are end words, and then they get repeated in prearranged patterns. So it's very constraining as a form, and that can be really exciting. But I was privately concerned that this was massively complicated, and in terms of a literary form to use, I was in my own thinking sonnets would be much easier, although longer for any carving, because by this time we were talking about stones, which were carvings on. Simon went away, and he was going up on the moors and spending time and collecting words he wanted to use, and he kept coming back with more and more words, and then he realised that he really had too many words for it to work with the sestina. And also all his trip up to the moors, let alone his walking of the Pennines, Pennine Way, he had got incredibly wet.
So he was reminded of water constantly. Well, that, yeah.
You know, if you're up there, it's either raining or it's snowing, or, you know, you're on a bar standing in the or it's misty.
There's always one part of you that's wet, at least.
Many parts, and lots of changing socks. So the Pennine Uplands are a watershed, and that was a really exciting thing to discover. I mean, it's something I naively hadn't realised. But, you know, Simon came back and said, and they're a watershed.
Yeah, yeah. So ultimately, this sounds like a weird question, but what was the sort of ultimate purpose of the project? What was your kind of desired outcome? And I suppose the sort of follow-up question, has it met your expectations?
So there were a number of desired outcomes. One was the idea that you make something which lasts potentially several hundred years, which is a remarkable thing to do. So that was important, but it was about connecting people to the landscape. There's something very special about Yorkshire, that people in Yorkshire feel passionately about being from Yorkshire and about the Yorkshire landscape. And as a southerner who'd come to Yorkshire, I mean, many years ago now, I came in 85, but all the same, I've always felt like I was a bit of an incomer. I have children who are born in Yorkshire and feel very strongly that they're from Yorkshire, but I always kind of felt this landscape wasn't mine. I was a visitor, but my affection for the landscape was kind of secondary compared to people who've been here for generations. And one of the things I wanted to do with the project was to enable people, however long they or their families had been in Yorkshire, to feel that they too had a connection with this landscape, enjoying it by going on it, by going up on it, by writing about it. They became part of that landscape story. And that certainly worked for me. I felt so much more like I had a right to enjoy the landscape. But also I know it worked for the very many young people that we took up on those uplands, some of whom have never, ever been in landscape like that before. And I guess, did it fulfil expectations? Yes. I mean, I was just looking back through the evaluation we did post-festival, and we were all saying it's extraordinary how much people have warmed to this project, how much they love the stones, how much... You know, there was someone I worked with in my office who was a wonderful administrator, young administrator, not a very outdoorsy person. She started carrying a pair of Wellingtons in her boot wherever she went so that she could just pop out and, you know, go and see a stand stone.
I think as well now they have a sort of a quality of almost like they've always been there. They're part of, they exist as part of the landscape.
Yeah. I think that's true. And that's what we always wanted. I mean, it's one of the reasons we chose the stones we did. You know, we chose stones that were either already there but have been, you know, affected by human beings, or stones that we introduced, and we only introduced stones for three poems, but in each case it was stone that already belonged with that landscape, if you see what I mean. There were two stones for Dew, which are like the gateposts that traditionally had on fields.
Hey, isn't there a one like hidden stanza stone that hasn't yet been found?
Yes, indeed. There was the final one with a hidden stanza stone.
That's sneaky. How big is it?
Small.
Right. Vaguely. Like a laptop small? Or
bigger than a Labrador?
Bigger.
Melon. Melon.
Right, okay, melon small.
Okay, right. That's good.
I don't think it'll ever be found. And that's what's so exciting. I mean, I do know let's put it this way. I know where it started, where we originally placed it, but I think one of the important clues is this was a project about water.
Mm.
And that final stone, in a sense, what we did was we gave it back to water.
Get your diving equipment, Tommy.
Yeah.
We're going to find it.
You okay, Tom?
Yeah, fine.
What's up, mate?
Nothing. I'm just annoyed.
Annoyed? What are you annoyed at?
Myself, John, myself.
Why?
Well, just that bit about the hidden stands of stone.
Oh, you're annoyed that we weren't the first people to find it?
No, I'm annoyed that when she said, it's the size of a melon, and I didn't say, that would be a watermelon then, because of the, you know, the water theme and stuff. Just
Yeah. You should have said that.
Should have.
Yeah. That would have been funny, that.
Yeah, it would have been, wouldn't it?
Never mind. It's gone now. Let it go. Anyway, we asked Rachel, which was her favourite stone?
Oh, good question.
I have to say Puddle. The poem for Puddle is my favourite of all the poems.
And why is that?
I just think there are lines in Puddle which are just amazing. You know, the opening, well, actually all of it, but the opening of Puddle, the rain junk sky litter.
Yeah, nice.
Some mainland Atlantic storm horses clatter this way, shedding their iron shoes. I mean, just for me, it's just amazing opening.
But if that's your favourite, Rachel, which one is the worst where you think Simon's maybe let himself down a little bit?
Could have tried a bit harder.
I think what's so interesting about Simon, what's so irritating about Simon, is that, you know, he was writing these massive pieces to be engraved in stone, and they were all really good. And it was, for me, it was also very interesting. And I've commissioned, you know, in my career, lots of writers, but it's always my experience that writers, however well-known they are, however experienced, will always be slightly nervous when they first bring their work.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had this extraordinary privilege. I was the first person to read this work. And Simon would say to me, what do you think? And, you know, is there anything you think, you know, I need to look at again? And I was really struggling. I think there was one word in all six poems when I said, maybe one word, you know, possibly should change, or a comma, I think we had a discussion about. He took one word out of one of the poems, and I'm trying to remember which word it was and which poem. You know, we didn't need other changes, which was amazing.
But he did take your advice. Unlike some artists, you know, he could have thrown the poem at you, couldn't he, and stormed out, but he listened.
Absolutely not Simon's way. And I mean, you know, the one word I said, I can't honestly remember whether the one word I just said something about, whether he did take that one out or not. The one that did come out was in relation to the way the stone was running when Pip was carving, because one of the amazing things about this project was the team was fantastic. Yeah. And, you know, I put out the call for stone carvers, networked everyone we could think of around stone carvers, and we had fantastic applications. We shortlisted 5 people. And obviously Simon was part of a crucial part of that interview process. Mm. The minute Pip came into the room and started talking about carving, you could see that she and Simon were on exactly the same wavelength about the work. And it stopped, you know, within minutes, it stopped being an interview so much as them talking about, well, what kind of font would work? Mm. And that artistic and creative relationship is absolutely at the heart of why this project is so powerful.
So this is a really trite question, but I'm intrigued. What's Simon Armitage like as a person when you're working with him? Because he comes across as extremely, just quite kind of, I was going to say modest. He seems quite funny. He's very quick-witted, and he's obviously fairly generous as well. Is that true, or is he actually awful to work with?
No, he's absolutely not a diva. All those things are true. And also, he's just really thoughtful and focused. And some people throw their weight around, and he's not someone who does that. And he will just very quietly say that he, you know, I think we probably need to do it like this. And you look at it and you go, yep, absolutely right, we do, we need to do it like that. And he just sees really clearly. I mean, you know, like when he came back and said, I think this suite of poems is about water. And we all went, of course, it, why didn't you see that? You know, and then he started to talk about what the forms of water were, you know, rain, puddle, dew, mist, snow. And again, we were all going, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's so perfect. It is brilliant. Can I ask you a question? Have you ever posted a poem in the poetry postbox?
I have never posted a poem personally in the poetry postbox.
It's quite hard to say, isn't it?
That in itself is a lovely little tongue twister you've invented there, John. Well done.
Yeah. Yes. No, I haven't.
Okay.
I've been up to see it.
But we've posted something, haven't we, Tom?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Have.
So, yeah, let's talk about our trip up Rumbles Moor to the Poetry Postbox we were just discussing there with Rachel, who was lovely, by the way, wasn't she?
Yeah, huge thanks to her for chatting with us there. So, yeah, let's set the scene here. We were just making our way up the hill to find the place.
So we're going to write some poetry today, Tommy.
Is that the next one that's got the poetry letterbox?
Yeah.
And how far is that, just out of interest?
It's not very far from here.
Good, good. It's quite warm, isn't it?
It is quite warm. Are you overheating?
No, I'm all right, I'm all right. Keep moving.
You've got a base layer on, Tommy.
It's wicking moisture away from me.
Okay, if you say so. We could take our tops off, couldn't we?
We could.
Now we're up on the moor.
I mean, in many ways, that would be poetry in itself.
It would. It would be glorious. But unfortunately, only the sheep would see us in our unclothed state. It's a bit of a waste, really. So, Tommy, what do you think the rules of this poetry... Well, can poetry have rules?
Oh, my God, are you doing all this stuff, are you now?
What are we writing about? That's what I was going to ask.
You mean, can we write rude words? Is that what you're asking? No, we can't, because some children might get it.
Okay, fair enough. Shall we attempt to write a superior version of Simon Armitage's Stanza Stones? Imagining... Hey, I've just had an idea.
Oh, God.
I've had a really good idea. How about we find a stone... And we could write on it with permanent marker in tiny letters.
That is a brilliant idea.
We could create our own stanza stones and put them on the moor.
Yeah, yeah.
And if people find them, they can maybe win a prize or something.
Have you got a permanent marker with you?
No.
Oh, okay. Maybe chisel some... Yeah.
Tiny lettering.
Tiny letters. I don't think we should try and write something better than Simon Armitage.
Do you think that would be a mistake?
I don't think it'd be fair to him, to be honest. Because I think, Jimmy, he probably feels quite proud of what he's done.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And then I think for two talented chances, Jimmy, just to come along and
just
with little effort, just
toss one off,
usurp it. It's not nice,
okay,
is it?
Okay, fair enough. So what we?
So I think we should write like some sort of average poetry. This may be a bit like that's all right.
Inspired by the landscape.
I don't want to. I don't want to tie myself down until we get there. Until I feel it.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Poetry's not about planning, John.
Well, these were. The stanza stones were.
No, he just... He did what? Did he not just chisel them?
No!
Did he not just turn up and chisel them?
No, Tom. No. It was like a commission, wasn't it?
So he spent time writing that.
Yeah, and he had to think about different forms of water.
It's ruined it for me.
Yeah.
So they weren't live? They weren't performed live?
No, he didn't chisel them.
It wasn't like live etching?
No.
Like a mason stenographer.
That's it, yeah.
Chipping away. Well, hold on a minute, Simon. Didn't get the last one. W's are tricky. Take me a bit longer. Slow down.
Yeah. Actually, scratch that last bit.
Yeah. So we'll just see. We'll just feel it.
All right, Tom.
We'll just feel each other when we get there. Yeah.
Sounds like the perfect day out.
Yeah. So is it far?
And before we knew it, we stumbled across the very spot we were looking for, a lovely little haven of reflection, a place for tired legs and stimulated minds, the poetry seat. How would you describe it, Tom?
I'd probably just say it was a stone bench with a wall around it and a little post box, but thank God you're here, John, to explain that in excruciating detail for our listeners.
Hey, look, Tommy, what does that say?
Marsden, 45 and a quarter miles.
We're nearly there, we might as well keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, so... Oh, I saw a poem. I'm going to stuff that in. You get a poem out.
Can you get that one out?
Yeah.
Right, we're going to read a poem
I stung myself with a nettle! That's not
Sorry,
part of the poem.
Shouldn't be laughing.
It's right in my car.
You all right?
Yeah, it's fine.
Do you want me to find a dock leaf for you, Tommy?
No.
All right. Well, we should explain, really. There is a poetry seat high up on the moor above Ilkley. And there's a little post box, and it says poems in, and there's a little flap there.
Are you explaining to our listeners what a post box is? Because it's a borderline patronising. So it's got a hole where you post something in, but this one's got a hole at the bottom where you can take things out. And the one that's in is called poems in, and the one that's out is called...
Poems out.
That's right, poems out.
And we've just found a poem.
Okay.
And Tommy's going to read it. Does it say who it's by?
No, it's anonymous.
Ooh.
Sit yourself down and rest a while and gaze upon the moor. Listen to the sounds around and soak in all you hear. Let your breathing slow, muscles rest. Step back from busy thoughts. Then up you get, and on your way, wherever you go, enjoy your day. And that was written on the 5th of June this year.
Well, what do you think, Tom? Are we allowed to critique that, or does that seem a bit harsh?
It's fine, isn't it? It's all right, isn't it?
Quite liked it. It was mellow, you know?
Do you just put this back in now to recycle it? Or
yeah, there's one there. I really want to get it out. Can you get those two pens there? And see if you can, just see if you can hook. That wasn't the one I meant, but that's fine. That one works. Okay, we can't read that one.
Did you just bring me because I got long fingers?
Yeah.
I can't get in there, mate.
No.
You've got more feminine hands, so you want to try it? Because my knuckles are quite manly.
No, I'm not getting past the old.
Have you got Simon Artigit's phone number? Because this should be happening. Do you know what I mean? Should.
Right, I think we should sit here, write some poems. Look, there's some people coming. They might be writing poems too. It's nice on the poetry seat.
Cool on the bum.
So, like we said in the earlier bit with Rachel, we've kept the poems we wrote secret up till now.
Yep, and I think it's about time we reveal them in all their glory.
Yeah, maybe we can give a little critique of each other's and see what we think they might mean.
Okay, this is actually quite exciting. How long has it been since we wrote these poems?
It's been a couple of months, hasn't it, at least? Yeah, mine's still very fresh in my mind. It's quite visceral and
wow,
it's there with me.
Must be really good.
Well, yeah, go on, you go first.
Okay, you sure? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. For a little while at least, put out the fire. Douse the nagging voices that hotly demand attention, action, choices, and listen. Sit on cooling slabs and hear nothing but bees fussing, a wagtail, a skylark. Through the rustle of ferns and patches of reedy bog grass, snatches of chatter like unfamiliar language, as though, with a little more emphasis, you might divine the meaning. Hush. It feels like I've forgotten how to hear, to open up my head like blossom. So now I let the drowsy marshland in, let it clear space, tidy the dusty, overstuffed garage. Usually we're too busy racing to take in the scratch of pen, the far-off clamour of the town. The world's quiet music. What I went with, it was very of its time in the
very
moment.
Literal of the environment you were in, wasn't it?
Very, very much so. Yeah,
like a reflection of the world going on around. Yeah, that's very good, that, John.
Hey, thanks, Tom. That's very nice of you. I seem to remember that you wrote yours incredibly quickly, and then smugly dropped your pen after about 30 seconds or something. And went right. That's it.
You won't appreciate the irony of this statement until I've read it, but I think that's what happens when inspiration hits you.
Well, that is true. That is true, Tom.
Isn't it? So my poem is just three lines.
Hang on. Is that all you're going to say about my poem?
I liked it.
You're not going to talk about how great it is and pull out some bits that you particularly enjoyed?
I like the words. Okay. I like the way you wrote the words.
Thanks, Tom. Oh, that's really lovely of you, Tom. Thank you.
And the pacing of it, the meter was good. Yeah?
That'll do. That's great. Thanks, Tom.
Okay.
On to yours.
On Ilkley Moor. Bar Muse. On Ilkley Moor, Bar Muse. On Ilkley Moor, Bar Muse.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. That is interesting. So clearly the muse just avoided you that day.
Yeah.
And yet, at the same time, gave you a little idea.
It's fully circular.
It is, isn't it? You're without the muse, and yet the muse has gifted you with a way out.
It is the poetic snake eating its own tail.
It's beautiful.
Some poor bugger's going to get that out of the poetry box at some point and feel really cheated. Someone's going to get yours first and go, wow, oh, this casts a scene. Oh, yeah. And then someone's going to get mine and go, oh, come on. Someone's cut some corners here.
I kind of liked it though, Tom.
Yeah.
It'll make someone chuckle.
I think it was, it's obviously, it's, in a way, it's funny. Obviously, I was being a little bit silly with it, but it's funny how you can get some depth in stuff like that, isn't it? How obviously you need to be aware of the cultural, you need to be aware of Ilkley Moor, Bartat, and where you are. Do you know what it is? So it is very much where you are right there, only works there, doesn't it?
It does.
It's a non-transferable poem.
It is, in a way. We should probably explain to, like, our American, Australian, whatever, brethren, people from other parts of the world who won't necessarily know that song.
Yeah, well, that's it, yeah.
Where it comes from. Tom, explain.
So there's a famous Yorkshire song called On Ilkley Moor Bar Tat. There you go.
Which means, on Ilkley Moor, without a hat.
Without a hat, yeah.
Hence, without a muse.
Yeah, right. I don't know if that lessens it, that you feel you need to explain it. It's in such depth that there isn't maybe that shared cultural...
Yeah, I mean, people can look it up, obviously. They could Google it, but it would be quite a hard thing to Google that, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be.
What does Tom mean by bar muse?
Yeah.
Oh, that was nice, Tom.
Well...
It was something, wasn't it? I mean, it was sort of... poetry, was it?
Yeah, absolutely. Makes you think. If it makes you think.
Exactly.
If it touches you in some way.
Exactly.
Yeah, great stuff. So, as we said, while we were writing what we now know and we've all heard are exceptionally good poems, some other walkers were coming up the path towards us.
In fact, I can hear them now, Tom.
Sorry.
No worries.
Hiya.
You can read. Huh?
She's got smaller hands, she'll be able to get those ones in.
To sneak out.
We couldn't
can
get...
Can you reach the poems in the top there? There's some tucked just behind it, and we can't get hold of them.
Oh, does it not turn around? Hey, that was a turn.
Ah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it
turns out.
Oh my God, there's hundreds of them.
Yeah, you can see.
Oh. We've just been schooled, Tom.
I know, it's good, isn't it?
I was meant to bring
it. I finished mine, John. Unless yours is still going.
Yeah, mine's still going.
Yeah. I'm glad we didn't phone Simon out because he's down the post box.
It's a better design.
Because he would have said there's a spinny thing on the side. He's going to be at Mambara.
Yeah, we're embarrassed. I think we cut that bit.
Yeah. Are you just going to put yours in the box or do you want to read it for our podcast?
That is embarrassing.
Be good, though, wouldn't it?
Hello, I'm John, by the way. This is Tom.
Hi. Hello. It's Maria.
Yasmin.
Hello. Okay, here we go. When times were hard, I grab my boots and go on a hike. When happiness comes to me, the boots and I goes for a wander. Smiles towards the sky and savours the feeling of being free. Me and my trusted boots, may we continue to wander and wander through good times and bad.
Wow. That's lovely.
That's brilliant.
That's my,
you brought
that's
it all home. You brought it all back to your boots.
I'm not even wearing boots, but we have been through a lot.
Yeah. Metaphorical boots is life.
You know what? It really has. Like, it's not just about COVID, but a lot of things happened to me, like, in the past 2 years, and it's when I've actually discovered hiking.
It's
it means
like
a lot.
Escaping and getting out there.
Yeah, escaping and discovering, I think.
Yeah,
I would say it's a lot cheaper than visiting a therapist.
Yeah,
it's more expensive.
Yeah,
I've actually got a hiking group, and tomorrow we're going again.
Nice. Where do you go tomorrow?
So we're going in Hebden Bridge.
Oh, lovely.
Just a nice waterfall.
It's hilly.
Yeah.
Around there.
Yeah. The last time we did was
bit,
in Lake District as well.
If you can't feel it, you're not doing it hard enough.
What is it about humans? We like to get up high. What's that all about?
Do you know what I think? The higher the better when it comes to hiking.
Yeah.
So when I was having trouble, when I think relationship breakdown, family issues and stuff, I actually took myself down in Wales on my own. Have you been to Cribgoc?
No.
So if you look at Cribgoc, it's quite scary. It's in Snowdon. And I went on my own. And that was quite tough. But after that, I'm like, I've done it. Anything quite hilly, whether it's raining or whatnot, I'm like, well, I've done Cribgoc. I think anything after that, I can manage. And it's quite applicable, really.
To life as well.
Sometimes when I feel like complaining in work, I'm like, no. You know, once you go up high, once you've been through all the pain, all the aches, anything after that, you can just refer back to it and say, I've done it.
So not only did we get, like, a free poetry recital, we also got some, like, free philosophy too.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, she turned out to be quite the peripatetic pundit, didn't she?
Yeah, you could call her a strolling sage.
A wandering wanderer.
All right, are we doing this? ambulatory Aristotle.
A rambling A wambling wise man.
No.
I have run out of alliterations. Anyway, do you know what the best thing she said was?
I don't, John. What was it?
I think it was this.
Human connection, communication, that seems to be more open when you're outdoors in the countryside as well. People don't mind saying hi.
Yeah, that's true.
You take a lot of steps, but it also helps you to take a step back and actually appreciate everything.
Taking steps to step back. Make a good title for like a self-help book, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Speaking of which, a little aside, but I read an article recently about the science of how walking actually aids creativity.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is one of those things that we all know is true intuitively. But yeah, it turns out the science backs it up. Obviously, walking makes your heart beat faster. And so, you circulate more oxygen to the body. But it also increases the amount in the brain as well. So it turns out that people perform better on tests of memory and attention, even after quite mild exertion. And also they found that walking promotes actual, like, new connections between brain cells, and it staves off aging brain tissue. And 'cause we don't have to, devote a lot of conscious effort to walking, then your attention's free to wander. And studies have shown that that particular state of mind is very closely linked to innovative ideas and strokes of insight. So
apparently, especially if you walk in green spaces, so walking in cities can sometimes deplete your mental resources, whereas walking in sort of less built up areas rejuvenates.
That definitely feels true.
It
would seem that quite a lot of writers have known about that for ages as well, like from Virginia Woolf to Nabokov, who were both big walkers, apparently. And Thomas Mann said, "Thoughts come clearly while one walks." And someone calculated that Wordsworth probably walked at least 180,000 miles in his lifetime.
Often often alone, I believe, in the fashion of a large floating body of water droplets.
It's true. So, hang on, just doing the math.
Yeah.
That is an average of about 6 miles a day from the age of 5.
Yeah. Hey, I tell you what, I bet he had lovely calf muscles, Wordsworth, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Oh. I bet he did.
That's crazy.
So good advice, Maria. Very good advice.
Yeah, thank you, Maria and Yasmin. Lovely to meet you. And thank you for sharing your poetry. I mean, that's quite brave, really, isn't it? Under any circumstances, but...
It was
massively brave.
It was very giving, very brave. But also, fortunately, quite a nice, heartfelt little poem as well.
Yeah. So I'm intrigued. Mm. Say Maria wanted to, like, completely change career,
Right.
And so she's decided she'd quite like to be the next Poet Laureate.
All right.
Simon Armitage. What sort of, how much could she expect to earn being Poet Laureate? I assume it's, like, some massive, big payday. What, 100 grand, 200 grand, 300 grand a year?
I believe the actual pay for the role of Poet Laureate is 5,750.
5,000, like £5 million. That's a lot, isn't it?
Tom.
That is a lot.
No, I mean just under 6 grand.
Yeah, so it's about 6 grand a day, isn't it?
A year, Tommy. A year.
Hey? So not 5 million.
No. But I suppose they're not really doing it for the money.
Oh, no, of course not. They're all these poety types, aren't they? They're doing it for the love of poetry and things
That's
like
it.
That, aren't they?
Exactly. But, Tom, they do also get a barrel of sherry.
Barrel of sherry. So you get paid a bit, but you mostly get paid in booze.
Exactly.
Wow.
The booze was a tradition started by King Charles I in 1630 when John Dryden was Poet Laureate. John Dryden.
Well, he can't have been that Dryden with all that sherry. So he was the first of the Poet Laureates then?
Poets Laureate, Tom.
Whatever.
Well, strictly speaking, Ben Jonson was granted a pension to write poetry by James I. But Dryden, he was like the first proper official Poet Laureate by title. Apparently, though, the whole sherry thing was forgotten about until Ted Hughes was appointed in 1984, when he kind of dropped a little hint that maybe they should rekindle the tradition.
Yeah.
And so it has remained since then.
Imagine a giddy little Ted Hughes as he stumbled across that piece of history and, hold on a minute, hold on, bring it back. So does that mean Simon Armitage is just, mostly drunk, like generally speaking, most of the time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, almost certainly completely blathered 24/7. Yeah.
I wondered why some of his poems were a little bit off,
Yeah. A bit hard to understand. Well, 720 bottles of sherry, that'll do it to you, I suppose.
Wow, yeah.
Do you know what I wonder, though? I wonder what poet laureates actually...
Poets laureates, I believe.
Whatever. I wonder what they have to actually do for all that sherry.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what's the job description?
Well, I'll tell you what it is.
What's that?
They don't actually have a formal job description.
Oh, right.
So it's just kind of quite loose. But in the past, they'd be expected to write poems for, you know, royal events and national occasions stuff, but not really anymore. Although they do still write poems for big events. It's just that they don't have to. So like Caroline Duffy, previous poet laureate, wrote a poem for Prince Harry's wedding.
Oh, right. Things like that. Yeah. Well, I suppose there must be a bit of pressure to write some royal stuff.
Well, there is, because interesting fact for you, John, as poet laureate, you are officially a salaried member of the royal household. So...
Unlike Prince Harry.
Unlike Prince Harry these days. But despite there being no particular requirement to write for specific events, Simon's gone above and beyond.
Of course he has.
And he's written official laureate poems to commemorate Prince Philip's death, the anniversaries of the moon landing, Keats's death, burial of the unknown warrior.
A lot of deaths.
Well, it happens, doesn't it? It happens a lot in life, I find.
Yeah.
Creation of the Peak District Park, which I believe didn't involve any deaths.
No deaths. That's good.
Lives lost during COVID, that's another deathy
one.
Quite
a few deaths.
The Flying Scotsman, that's a train. Don't think that's killed anyone.
That's all right,
The Coronation, and I mean, there's loads of stuff. Plus, because your remit is basically just to like promote poetry, isn't it? Simon's also got three big flagship projects.
Right, what are they?
So there's the Laurel Prize, which is nothing to do with Laurel and Hardy, I believe.
Shame.
Yeah, sadly. It's an annual award for the best collection of nature and environmental poetry to highlight the climate crisis.
Okay, yeah.
There's the Laureate's Library Tour, and this is brilliant, this, to celebrate British public libraries. Simon's touring around libraries in alphabetical order, doing talks with the writers.
Nice.
Which is fantastic.
Where's he up to?
I think he's up to H, so he's probably doing Hampstead, Hammersmith, Huddersfield and Hull, I would think. And he also is helping to found a national poetry centre in Leeds, around your neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. That is in the old church on Woodhouse Lane.
Right.
It used to be Halo Nightclub.
Okay.
Been clubbing in there, back in the day. Okay, so he's a pretty busy fella.
Yeah.
That probably explains... why he couldn't come on the podcast.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, maybe we could forgive him that one, couldn't we?
Nah, still upset.
Fuming still upset. About it. So,
and a fellow Terriers supporter, Tom, you'd think that might have swung it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, anyway, let's move on from that. I can feel... I feel my yellow bile rising.
Oh, heck.
So, you know what we should do?
What should we do?
We should go back to the moors.
Yes.
And see what rambling Tom and John from the past... are up to right now.
I suspect they're probably just pissing about.
Probably. There's a fairly high probability that's what we're doing. But let's find out anyway.
Oh, look. If you turn this handle, Tom, look.
Yeah, I know.
If you turn the handle, look, they all pop out the bottom. Oh, my God.
We're going to read one more. It's all right reading.
There's loads of treats here. I might have to read a couple more.
No, they're all about the bloody moors. Moors, mountains, moors.
Yellow, green... flowing moors.
Moors.
The lonesome tree, standing tall and free. Distant figures pass us by, each with their own story to tell. We smile and greet the people we meet. Something about orange, purple, carrot.
I think that's just a reworking of Pigeon Street theme tune, isn't it?
It might be.
I'm not reading anymore. It's not about the moors.
All right.
People just think about something that's not about the moors. Was yours about the moors?
Well, it's quite inspiring being surrounded by the moors. Yes, it was. Yeah. I admit it.
Wow.
Felt good. Right, let's carry on.
Contributed something.
Yeah.
So, what's the next one?
Puddlestone.
And how far, roughly, how far is that?
I don't know, a couple of miles.
Right, and how far is the nearest pub? Just, you know, out of interest.
About a mile and a half. The Cow and Calf, just over that way.
Right, okay, so...
Are you...
Well, no, I was thinking...
What?
Just it's very warm, isn't it? Like, it's really
yeah.
warm. So, what if we went went to the pub instead.
Are you suggesting that we go for a beer and just pretend that we've been to the Puddlestone?
Exactly, fake it. Just read out the poem when we're at the pub. You know, stick some, I don't know, sheep sounds on it or whatever in the background. And
that's cheating.
It's not cheating, is it? That's acting. It's acting, isn't it? More than cheating.
Well, whatever it is, it's a bloody great idea. Ah, here we are, the Cow and Calf pub.
The last stone. Here we are, the last stone.
Sorry, the last stone.
Reading poetry.
Hey, here. I'll have a South Island, please.
A pint of South Island and a pint of Peroni, please.
Well, Tom.
Yes, here we are, John. Here we are at the other stone.
We've made our way all the way up to the top of the moor.
That was a long walk.
Oof. Exhausted.
Yeah.
Just let me have a drink of water.
Yeah.
Do you want to read this one?
Yeah, go on. Difficult to make out on the stone there, John, but I'll try. I'll try.
Do your best, Tom.
Okay. So this is puddle. Rain junk, sky litter. Some May mornings, Atlantic storm horses clatter this way, shedding their iron shoes in potholes and ruts, shoes that melt into steel grey puddles, then settle and set into cloudless mirrors by noon. The shy deer of the daytime moon comes to sip from the rim, but the sun likes the look of itself, stares all afternoon, its hard eye lifting the sheen from the glass, turning the glaze to rust. Then we don't see things for dust.
See, that is a bit of a belter.
It is, isn't it? Just the very essence of looking into a puddle to see everything that's outside the puddle.
Yeah.
It just works so well, doesn't it?
It does. It's like a day in the life of a puddle, isn't it? It sort of charts the passage of time, unlike the others.
Yeah.
And the moors are a bit like that as well. You know, the weather can change very quickly up on the top of the moor. You know, I've been walking along getting absolutely battered with rain. And then 2 minutes later, you're kind of sweating and, the steam coming off you.
It was definitely worth the walk up here to see it, wasn't it?
I mean, it really definitely is.
If you're around this area. Yeah.
We should probably describe it's flat and lying down, and it's just off the stone path right at the top of Rumbles Moor.
Is it? Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Anything else that stood out for you with that poem, Tom? This poem here on this rock. Poem,
the one we're looking at right now on the rock?
Yeah.
Nice. It's a nice poem. I like it.
Any little... No particular...
Well, I feel like you're a school teacher now, like trying to get me to give the answer. Come on, Tom, we've been studying this for two terms. Just, you must know by now. Nothing's come out. I don't know.
No, like a nice rhyme or something. Metaphor. I don't know.
It's just, I mean, it works, doesn't it? It does what it does.
It does. Do you know what? The last line, then we don't see things for dust. When I first read it, I felt like Simon was just going, God, I've got to end this poem. I better wrap this up. Do you know what I mean? And it felt a bit like, sort of a bit rushed. It gets dark, you can't see the end. But now I think it's one of my favourite lines, because when I thought about it, it is abrupt, but it's kind of like a little light switching off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then in the darkness, something appears. I didn't really get the dust line, and then it's really obvious, but the puddle's like a hole in which you can see the infinity of space. Do you know what I mean? It's space dust, isn't it? That's what it is. It's like the stars and the Milky Way. And I suddenly realised, and then I thought, that's actually bloody genius, because it is quite abrupt, but I went from thinking it was a bit crap to thinking that's an absolute genius line.
See, I was thinking that that is just the... So the second stanza is basically the puddle vanishing. The sun's on it all afternoon.
Oh, you mean it's just dried up?
It's just drying up. It's slowly
literally
drying
to
up.
Dust.
All the magic has gone, yes. And then you don't see things, because it is just dust. It is just a hole. It's just...
Oh, that's good as well. Because I had the glaze, turning the glaze to rust, I had the sunset.
Ah,
so it was
you
like
see.
The time of the day changing.
Could be.
I thought that was maybe more the colour of the mud kind of coming through, just kind of so you lose that sort of depth of the puddle as bits of the earth are poking through.
Both were. Isn't that brilliant about poetry?
Yeah.
The fact that you can have two entirely different meanings, but sort of both work brilliantly. Or maybe that's just what happens when it's a good poet.
Maybe, maybe. Right. Let's walk back down the path.
Same again?
Yeah.
So, the following day, even after all of that exertion, we decided to go even further afield. And so we headed over to Oxenhope Moor, to Bronte country, which actually has given us another idea for another episode. So watch this space. But yeah, so we set off from Worley Moor Reservoir, known locally as Fly Flats, which you probably recognised as the place Tommy Lee Royce cycles to in Series 3 of Happy Valley, Tom.
Nope.
No, me neither. Just happened to read it yesterday.
Okay, yeah, no idea.
Anyway, so yeah, off we headed up Nab Hill to find the remote and lonely Mist Stone.
So we're walking through what seems like a little groove that's been cut into the top of the hill and then been walled up on the sides with slaty-type rock. What rock is that, Tommy, our resident geologist?
That is a Mesolithic igneous rock.
Ah. Yeah.
From the Proterozoic period. I don't know, John.
Has this all been...
I think...
Has this all been quarried?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of digging up here over the years.
Yeah.
For stone and...
It's quite useful stone, this, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good flat stone, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, massively surprisingly, it turns out we were sort of right about that, weren't we? We were walking through what's known as a delf, an old millstone grit quarry, prized for its large flat slabs. So, through the 1800s, Nab Hill would have been in like a hive of activity, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. Like big, burly Yorkshiremen like Tom.
Yeah, well, yeah, big, burly, handsome men like Tom. Yeah.
Coming and going, hoiking the stuff out of the ground, and horses and carts up and down the hill, a whole rock industry.
So, I mean, obviously a perfect place to engrave a poem on a big, massive, flat stone, isn't it?
Do you think we just keep... Ah,
there's a little sign.
Look, stands a stone sign this way. It's a nice little spot though, isn't it? I can see a cairn over there, and I know it is near a cairn. So let's head for that.
And then we reached the top of the hill, and there it was, the Mist Stone.
Hold on a minute. Well, that's...
What?
Well, it didn't quite happen like that, did it?
What do you mean?
Are you not going to play the next bit of audio we got? Because it's not...
Well, the wind was blowing really hard, so you can't really hear it anyway. So,
well, that would have been true, but I've managed to actually clean up the audio. John, you'd be pleased to know. Oh. So apologies for the quality. Some of it is a bit tinny and windblown, but now we can all hear how we really found the Mist Stone, John.
Oh, good.
Having trouble finding it at the moment. It's not near that cairn, but there's a couple more over here. So we'll go and investigate.
Where is it?
I don't know. There's some people coming. Should we go and ask them?
That's a bit embarrassing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
Was it here?
I'm pretty sure it's here somewhere.
Stone.
We are looking for the Stanza Stone.
Oh, God, it's so obvious. I can't believe you haven't found it. You've gone past it.
Damn it. Is it that obvious? Are we just stupid?
No. It is when you know where it is.
Hello. You know it by heart, presumably.
What, the Stanza Stone?
The poem.
No. Is it mist here?
It is mist.
Yeah.
Are you,
I know that bit.
Are you nearby?
I live sort of over that way a bit. Yeah. We come up here regular.
Yeah.
So, and we keep meaning to do some of the other Stanza Stones.
Yeah.
We've done water, and we did the one that was on Inclay Moor.
Oh, Puddle.
Yeah. And we did that water where we had to crawl down, and it's actually in the water.
Yeah,
when we did
that's best.
Well.
Yeah. We did them yesterday, didn't we, Tom?
Yeah, we did.
All right.
So back over to this
one. Sure, yeah. Well.
Oh, bless you. Yeah, we're really good at finding them. I mean, it could make them a bit more obvious, I reckon.
Did you actually find a signpost for this one?
Yeah, we saw the signpost directing us up this way.
Yeah, we've seen a few people up here trying to find them.
Wandering around aimlessly.
Yeah. you coming as well?
Right.
You gone for a long walk today, or you just...
Maybe about 7 by the time we've finished. So you'll come down here.
We did, yeah.
That's the important
Ken.
Ah, you go down here. Do you know, I looked over here and I couldn't see anything.
There, look, can you see the writing?
There you go. Fantastic.
A big crack down this side.
Yeah.
Through the bilberries there.
Fantastic.
Be in.
Thank you for your help.
It's all right. Yeah. We can't work out if the crack was part of the rock or if that appeared afterwards.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's obviously been done in situ, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But yeah, there you go. It's
Thank you very much.
All
nice
right.
to meet you.
Okay.
Thanks. Have a good walk. Enjoy. Well, Tom, we found it all on our own.
Yeah. Which one? So this is mist.
This is mist.
You could say, John, that we missed it. Didn't we?
That's good.
Should we pretend we did that on purpose?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, do you want to do the honours? And
yeah, this is actually very readable.
It is, isn't it? Much clearer than the other one.
And because it is not in any way a misty day, it's actually quite easy to read. So here we go. Mist. Who does it mourn? What does it mean, such nearness, gathering here on high ground while your back was turned, drawing its neck curtains around? Featureless silver screen, mist is water in its ghost state, all inwardness, holding its milky breath, veiling the pulsing machines of great cities under your feet, walling you into these moments, into this anti-garden of gritstone and peat. Given time, the edge of your being will sleep into its fibreless fur. You are lost, adrift in hung water and blurred air, but you are here.
It's all right, and if you like that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's done quite a nice job there, Tom. Water in its ghost state. What do you think of that? That's nice, isn't it?
Hung water and blurred air. That's what it is, isn't it? Water in the hanging, making things blurry.
I love that as well. Holding its milky breath, veiling the pulsing machines of great cities.
Yeah. I mean, it could be written by someone who's got cataracts.
That is also true.
Kind of, you know, milky. It's.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose that is still a state of mist, isn't it?
It's difficult to perhaps fully appreciate it today because it isn't slightly misty.
No, exactly. It's actually a beautiful day. It is a stunning view from here. We're looking down to Oxenhope and then Haworth beyond that. But it is a nice little spot. But easy to miss. So, okay, yeah. If you're looking for mist, follow the little sign, and then you have to drop down behind the little cairn cubbyhole thing. And it's on quite a steep slope.
Facing out across the shallow valley, really, isn't it?
Yeah. So if you're going in hunt of the Stanza Stones, that's where it is. Top tips.
So yeah, if you're under any misapprehension previously, I think you'll probably be coming to the conclusion that this Armitage fella is actually quite good at knocking out the odd poem now and again, isn't he?
I think he is, isn't he?
What is it? What is it? Do you think that sets him apart, John? What do you think his I don't know, his stamp is, his seal, his what makes it a Simon Armitage poem?
I think he's able to do that thing where he can straddle the gap between huge popularity and critical acclaim, which I think is a very difficult thing to do. He's, on the one hand, very highly regarded by critics and even other writers, but also by the general public as well. He's accessible, isn't he?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
At the same time, yeah. He doesn't ever kind of dumb it down.
No, but he's not afraid to keep it very down to earth, is he?
No, exactly.
He's not fancy smancy. He'll do you mean he likes to tap into that kind of nostalgia, shared cultural nostalgia and things like that.
That's it, exactly.
To work through stuff. And everyone understands that. Everyone gets it. You don't need to be a doctor of poetry to understand what he's doing. Yeah.
It feels recognisable, like the words he's putting in. You know, he's not like using loads, like you say, he's not using super fancy words or anything a lot of the time. He's just making things sound really good. And he's so, I mean, it feels like he works really hard on every poem because they've got real kind of, he's got the sort of gift of music in his poetry, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
everything's
yeah.
in the right place.
it's just got a nice rhythm and a lovely sound to it. It's a bit like a really good song. Do you know what I mean? It's like the first, you might enjoy it when you first listen to it, but as it becomes even more familiar over time, you go, "Ooh, yeah, that is really clever. I didn't notice that bit." Or, you know,
yeah,
like a Radiohead song. Do you know what I mean? Like a grower.
Got layers in there.
Getting better with every pass.
What's, have you got a favourite poem from him?
Just dropped my poetry book. Do you know what, Tommy? I have got too many. I've got loads of Armitages, but
say you're on a podcast talking about him, and he did have to pick one that we were planning to read.
I honestly couldn't make a decision.
Just pick one.
Do you know what
pick
I did?
One.
I picked out a few I thought would be good for this scenario.
Yeah.
Right, as in to be read out on a podcast. And I thought I'd let you choose. So I'm going to give you the titles of some that I really love, and you just pick one. Zoom, To His Lost Lover, Poem, Mother Any Distance, Remains.
I think we should go with Poem.
Okay, well, that's a good one. Good choice. Okay, I think he's written a couple or maybe more poems called Poem, funnily enough. But this
brilliant
one,
poet, but absolutely terrible at coming up with titles, isn't he? Really is.
Absolute rubbish.
Really is. Really lets himself down.
Yeah, I think this was from... This was from Kid, the collection Kid. Here we go. Poem. And if it snowed and snow covered the drive, he took a spade and tossed it to one side and always tucked his daughter up at night and slippered her the one time that she lied. And every week he tipped up half his wage and what he didn't spend each week he saved and praised his wife for every meal she made and once, for laughing, punched her in the face. And for his mum he hired a private nurse and every Sunday taxied her to church, and he blubbed when she went from bad to worse, and twice he lifted 10 quid from a purse. Here's how they rated him when they looked back. Sometimes he did this, sometimes he did that.
Yeah.
It's good, isn't it? It's so simple. It's such a beautifully simple idea.
Yeah, it is.
And, like, I think sort of classic Armitage, because it's just not judgmental.
No, it's just saying, well, this is how it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then there's a reader, you kind of go, well, yeah, I recognise that. That is how it is. I might have to have a think about that.
Yeah,
now.
And there's an implication that aren't we all a little bit more complicated than people like to make out?
Yeah, but there's just so much you can take from, isn't it? Or is it challenging you to judge them without judging yourself? Kind of he without sin cast the first stone sort of thing. Or
you're right, in a way, it's sort of inviting you at the end, isn't it? Saying, how would you rate him?
Yeah.
I just think that's brilliant. You wonder how much being a probation officer all those years informed his work.
Yeah.
Because he's very focused on the little guy, do you know what I mean? The underprivileged. And loads of his poetry, you know, deals with that sort of, deals with poverty or offenders and mental health and stuff like that. So there's like a thread of empathy through his poetry. It's like he has... It's good if you've lived a bit of life before you start doing art, if that makes sense. Because then you've got something to say.
Yeah.
And it's like he's witnessed all the hardships that, you know, people suffer every day. And he sort of gets you to live through them. And if he hadn't have done that job, he would not be that poet, would he?
No, of course not. No, we're all product of our history, aren't we? But
But Tom, what have you picked out for us?
I've picked out one. I think I'm more of a fan of, I don't know what you call it really, surreal seems to be going too far, but he has a knack of mixing kind of the real world with a sprinkling of nostalgia with a story that you're not quite sure what's real in it and what's not real, or what's, is it musings of a child's mind of joining dots that shouldn't be joined or whatever.
Yeah, he does.
So one of my favourites is called The English Astronaut. Let me read it to you now, John. The English Astronaut. He's done a better title on this one, to be fair to him as well, hasn't he?
He has.
Much better. Well done, Simon. That's much better. The English Astronaut. He splashed down in the rough seas of Spurn Point. I watched through a coin-op telescope jammed with a lollipop stick as a trawler fished him out of the waves and ferried him back to Mission Control on a trading estate near the Humber Bridge. He spoke with a mild voice. Yes, it was good to be home. He'd missed his wife, the kids, couldn't wait for a shave and a hot bath. Are there any more questions? No, there were not. I followed him in his Honda Accord to a little chef on the A1, took the table opposite, watched him order the all-day breakfast and a pot of tea. "You need to go outside to do that," said the waitress when he lit a cigarette. He read the paper, started the crossword, poked at the black pudding with his fork. Then he stared through the window for long, unbroken minutes at a time, but only at the busy road, never the sky. And his face was not the moon, and his hands were not the hands of a man who had held between finger and thumb the blue planet and lifted it up to his watchmaker's eye.
Very nice, Tommy.
Mm.
I don't know why I'm congratulating you, but yeah, you did read it, and you read it very nicely.
I still don't quite know what it's all about.
Yeah, what's your feeling about it?
I honestly don't.
And why do you like it?
I don't know. My dad was from around that area of the Humber. Mm. So I guess that being able to sort of visualise it just kind of brings it into some kind of contrast in your head. And just, you know, the whole, again, that little sprinkling of nostalgia, isn't it, with the little chef and things like that and stuff. Do you mean kind of just...
Yeah, he's brought it home. He's brought it, like, home to a recognisable North, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Was that written for something? Was that a laureate poem?
I assume Sam was just bored one afternoon or something and just thought he'd knock out a poem. It was in the Seeing Stars anthology back in 2011. So make of that what you will.
Yeah. It's literally bringing an astronaut down to Earth, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think it's unlikely there was an astronaut landing in the North Sea just off Sperm Point. So I'm not sure if that's... Not. I'm thinking he might be telling fibs. I don't know what to believe in it. Did the guy even order a breakfast, or did he order, like, something else? I don't know.
Oh, well, very good. I like that. I like that a lot.
So, I mean, we might not know the entire meanings of the poems that we like from Sam, but we probably can conclude... Mm. That he is, generally speaking, a bloody good poet.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
But, Tom, do you know who else is good at poetry?
Uh-huh. Well, us, isn't it? Is it us? Us.
No, Tom. No, I didn't mean us.
Right, okay.
I meant our...
Our listeners. Do you mean our listeners? Is that who it was? Listeners.
I do mean our listeners, exactly. So, as mentioned earlier, we put a call out to our luscious listeners back in midsummer, asking them to send in a poem that is in some way related to water. Any kind of water, in any state. We're not fussy, but that was the theme.
So why don't we have a little listen and see what they came up with? See how it compares to Simon's stuff, right?
That's a little bit unfair to compare to Simon's, but yeah.
Well, that's...
I appreciate what you're saying. So Tom, what have you got first?
The first one we've got is from listener Sarah Oakes. I assume she's a listener, hasn't just randomly sent us a poem by chance. And it's called The Water of the River Ness. The water ripples through me and soothes every fear, filling me with a calm that is sweet, fresh, and clear. The water echoes around me, cradling me in sound, and here I find more peace than in any book bound. The water sits beside me and gently holds my hand as I delight in all the beauty that makes up nature's band. The water stays with me, murmuring in my mind, and whenever I am lost, its compass I can find. The water will follow me wherever I may go, for its soft kindness can melt any snow.
It feels like Sarah's had a very nice experience.
Yeah.
Drifting around in the River Ness.
Imagine her sat on the bank soaking it all up and using that to go back to in times of needed meditation. Yeah. And
it's almost like she's written that in real time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Very nice. Well done, Sarah.
John, what have we got next up?
We have Cyclops Dave. I assume he's not an actual Cyclops. I don't know.
He might be. Hey, he might be. We're all inclusive.
Yeah, we don't mind. So. If you are, we'll take you.
Do you think Cyclops differentiate between winking and blinking? Or do they have one word that covers both?
That's a really good question, Tom. Mm.
It doesn't necessarily need answering. I think it's just one for everyone to... have a little think about in their own time.
I've got a feeling about it though.
Mm.
Like I feel like sometimes when they just want to kind of lubricate their eye, they just blink, right?
Yeah.
But when they want to kind of make a point, give someone a little, then there's just it's slightly different. The lid comes down from the side. Are we? We're going out on a tangent here. Should we get back to the poetry?
A little bit. It's not our fault, is it? It's Cyclops Dave.
No. It's an interesting subject. Two bits of hydrogen and one bit of oxygen combine to make rain. Also seas and lakes and waterfalls, rainbows and snow, and canyons and swamps and streams, creeks and brooks, plus glaciers and puddles and rock pools, fords and ponds. Mostly rain, sometimes fog, but mostly rain. What do you think of that one, Tom?
I like that one.
I quite like that one as well.
It's cute, isn't it? Yeah, it's just...
It is. There's a point at which you're not sure when it's going to end.
Yeah.
Probably could have gone on a little bit longer, but yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of saying how complicated and essential and water is, isn't it?
Yeah.
But how ordinary and everyday it is at the same time.
But how it mostly just feels like rain.
It's just rain, yeah.
A lot of the time. It's good. I like that one.
Yeah.
Well done, Cyclops. So I shouldn't call him that, should we?
No.
Well done, Dave.
He's certainly one to keep your eye on, though, isn't he?
How's your pirate voice, Tommy?
I guess we're going to find out, aren't we?
I guess we are.
Thanks to Craig Margolis, previous Flash Fiction competition winner on the Failing Writers podcast, who wrote, inspired by a mug. The pictures on a mug.
Yeah, of all
which
things.
He did send us a little picture of. And he's written... A tercet, apparently.
So a tercet is three lines. An enclosed tercet is three lines, and with the rhyming pattern of ABA. So the first line rhymes with the last line. So let's see what that sounds like.
Beware the fearsome octopod. Pirate king am I, monarch of the seas. Them ditties don't lie. Oh, arms I got eight for a chest full of gold and gems o' great weight. Might small, but sure mighty, I loves a good scrap, not just a wee fighty. Any calls me a squid, I'll wrap around his stalk and pop off his lid. And when swimming about, them's I catch looking, I'll gouge their eyes out. All these I would do if it were sailing along the wide ocean's blue. But aye, there's the rub, because me watery world's bounded by a tub.
Favourite line there? Not just a wee fighty. Mm. Well, that was nice. It's weird, isn't it? Because it does feel like there's a line missing out of each one, weirdly. It has an odd effect, doesn't it, a tercet?
Yeah, it's like a three-wheeled car, isn't it?
It is. It's the Robin Reliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of the poem world.
You kind of get round the corners, but you're not sure if you'll get round the next one.
But yes, nice, interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really aggressive little octopus, isn't he?
It's just weird, isn't it, how this octopus, fearsome octopus, why does he talk like a pirate? Why would he talk like a pirate?
It's a good question. It's maybe a question for Craig.
Yeah.
Maybe all sea creatures talk like pirates. Maybe that's like a thing.
Maybe that's where the pirates got it from.
Yes.
They were just trying to blend in.
Well, yeah, all that time out there.
Yeah.
On the blue yonder. Wow. Okay, so the next one is a sonnet from Dominic Peloso, a.k.a. Superliminal. And he's actually sent us a few sonnets from a book called A Series of Small Heartbreaks.
Mm.
And I've chosen to read this one. Because it's got a bit of ghostliness about it.
Ooh.
I hate being the guy on the watch at night. Roar of unseen waves on the dark ocean. Should I be reading this in a pirate voice?
No, you're not an octopus, are you? Why would you?
Ah, okay, cool. I hate being the guy on watch at night. Roar of unseen waves on the dark ocean. Stomachs all nauseous from the sea's motion. But worst of all is that damn ghostly light bobbing behind us. At the edge of sight. Never closes in or causes commotion. But what could it be? Don't have a notion. It creeps me the hell out. Chills me with fright. Once dawn starts to break, it's always gone. Is it waiting for a time opportune? Captain's seen it, but insists we press on. So I spend each watch clutching my harpoon. Risking my life for silks and cardamom. This voyage is cursed. Pray we reach land soon.
Yeah, I wonder if they ever made it back.
Yeah.
I wonder what it was.
There is actually a rather nice illustration. It's a very simple illustration, but it does look a little bit like the moon, so maybe it is just the moon.
He's just going mad. He's like got sea madness.
Yeah.
Which is why the captain's seen it as well.
That's right, and not done anything about it.
And he's like, don't be stupid. Come on, we'll just crack on. Yeah.
And this guy's freaking out, threatening people with his harpoon.
Yeah.
Nice, Dominic. Well done. Moving on. Tom, give us another.
This is called Boat Upon the Water by Linda Thornhill. The simple thrill of sailing forth when blowing back your hair, gazing down into the deep and wondering what lies there. The rhythmic bobbing up and down that calls your soul back home, hypnotized by gentle waves, the patterns made of foam. Fingers trailing sensuously, water trickling through, ever-changing shades of green with grey and blue. Time suspended as you pause to take in every sight. The air seems fresher suddenly. Your heart is feeling light. Daily cares are washed away like castles by the tide. And all the world is right again as you savour this boat ride.
So that, do you know, that one reminds me of the first one that we read.
Yeah, kind of finding a place and a clear mind and a sanctuary and it within the water and everything around it. Yeah.
Very similar.
Yeah. I like the bit in that about the fingers trailing sensuously through the... Do you know when you're in like a little rowing boat or something, you can just put your hand in.
Yeah.
And it's like the water seems like such a thick, viscous liquid as it drags your fingers through and you just kind of...
It's one of those things you've got to do if you're in a boat.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's a 14er. That's an iambic heptameter. So it's got 14 beats on each line. And I think she's pretty strict.
Wow.
But... That's a really classic thing, isn't it? You know, that kind of rhythm. I find it interesting when people do like free verse or whether people choose a specific structure. Because actually structure, it can help, can't it? It can actually help because it's a hindrance, but it also gives you something to work to.
Yeah.
The next one is from Robin Rich and... I thought this was really interesting. Iron oxided to a tang that can't be swallowed. A cough of pink delight that bounces around the chromium. It was nothing. Then a ghost of nothing. Then a story about a ghost of nothing. Then it finally rested. Where? You know where. You do. Where is that moment when the curled wail of emotional pain, strain, drain, eyes dry, changes to laughter? That straightens the back and even that shadow. The you, other side of where you, that mess on the lino. You un-origami that. Smooth it and let its emptiness, its blankness, nothingness, soothe. While that folding into the next best you, bereft of hate, progresses. Try to move. A being. The current in water and not the water. Kind of intriguing. I sent Robin Rich an email after receiving that and just asking what inspired it. And apparently it was a nasty court case.
Right.
Not criminal or divorce.
Okay.
But a nasty court case. And that actually changed the way I looked at it entirely. But it's amazing how if you have something that really isn't clear like that, how you can sort of go off in your own little world.
Yeah, yeah. What was your initial thoughts about it?
My initial thought was illness.
Right, okay.
Actually, it was like almost like a sort of consumptive coughing.
Yeah.
Pink delight being like, blood and bouncing around the chromium, the sink. And then a sort of a coming to terms with it and deciding to be... Almost like deciding to live your life and be someone else and change the way you live because you're aware of your mortality. That's what I thought it was.
Mm.
But it was not a nasty court case. But then that sort of made its own sense as well. It's not particularly watery, is it? But it's got a mention of water at the end. But
yeah, yeah.
What do you think of it, Tom? What do you think of poetry that isn't entirely clear? Where it's not just a circle to complete, it's actually you've got to build quite a lot of the circle yourself.
Yeah, I think poems like this are trying just to tap into sort of a raw emotion, aren't they?
Yeah.
Sort of, it's like they're just shedding away all these extra bits of language that we use to make language work on a day-to-day level.
Yeah.
And just like it's like the framework of the communication, the unseen underneath of the raw communication.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that, and I think it just takes you very quickly from place to place without having to write a full sentence about it. It just kind of throws these different starting points and meanings at you that you have to sort of linked together, and it's just happening quite quickly. I like that kind of
I quite like
poetry.
It, yeah.
It feels very raw, doesn't it?
It's almost like a sort of collage of words, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah.
It's like, here are some words that mean something to me at this particular moment about something.
It's like a sort of an expressionist painting, isn't it, or something? It's like a...
It is, like splashes of colour, but you're not quite sure what it's making up, but you get a sense of it.
So you might be able to tell it's a face, but it's weird. Or there's some extra stuff where it's got one eye, and you don't know whether it's blinking or winking. That kind of thing.
Yeah, that was nice. I thought it had a nice rhythm to it as well.
Yeah, a nice little bit of stop-start in it as well, wasn't there, where it kind of like runs through stuff and this kind of joining of thoughts and then almost like a turn away and a stop and a change of pattern or feeling in it. Yeah, no, it's good.
Quite a different one, this one. Over to you, Tom.
Yeah. Water, water everywhere. By Jimmy Hollis. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. The sewage in the rivers, and bugger, don't they stink? Will I be swimming at the beach? I very hardly think. Be wary of that stuff that will be filling up your sink. Money, money, there's a lot, but it's not everywhere. Enough to keep our rivers clean, but factories don't care. They couldn't give a toss for you if you don't hold a share. And politicians pocket it and tell you it's not there. Water, water, source of life, you'll be the death of me. There's poison coming out my tap and poison in the sea. There's poison in the hearts of those whose greed won't let us be. Oh well, I'll put the kettle on and make a pot of tea.
Little satirical one there.
Yeah.
For the times.
Yeah, sad but true, I think, yeah. It's quite nice wrapping up such a serious satirical message, isn't it? In quite a nice, plain, bouncy verse.
Yeah, it works, doesn't it?
And then... the whimsical end just is the icing on the cake, isn't it?
Yeah, I like that.
So, yeah, Jimmy, thank you very much for sending that in.
Well done, mate. Very good.
Next one is for you to read, John, and it's July by AJD.
Yeah. Twitter handle @write.to.remain.silent. I watch the July sky mourn, in contrast to your glowing skin, of which I see more today than usual. The raindrops kiss your face, and each tiny drip rolls down your shoulders. I smile. Despite the tears of this mid-year storm, you are the eye of it. Calm and peace around you. You are the shelter that I want to run to in the midst of this tempest. Splashing sounds, mud on my feet. It doesn't matter. I'm in the cleansing rains of your silhouette. The flowers and the trees, they dance to the beat of my heart, synchronized with the pitter-patter of your fingertips. Puddles of longing lingering in me. I frolic in these flirtatious fens as you pick up the leaves strewn by the teasing wind. I watch the July sky mourn in contrast to your glowing skin, and I wish I were the raindrops falling blindly on your lips. Sensuous little one, that.
Yeah, yeah. Nice little full circle. Start to finish.
Yeah.
That nice
beat. Very nice.
I think probably saving the best use of language until that very last stanza.
Yeah.
And I wish I were the raindrops falling blindly on your lips. That is lyrical.
That is lyrical, you're right.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Really is. That could be at home in a poem or a 1980s power ballad.
Definitely.
It would just go anywhere, wouldn't it?
It'd be nice in a Bonnie Tyler song, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That would work. Or like maybe, you know, something more modern, an Ed Sheeran or something like that, or it's just
no, it's very nice,
timeless
that.
Lyrical writing, that, well done.
Yeah,
love it. Next up we have aren't we blessed, John, that so many people decided to send in their poems?
We are blessed indeed.
It really is lovely.
I really like this one as well.
This one is by Poppy Hobbs and it's called By the Mill Ponds. Under the sweet September skies we sit, savouring the last of summer's strawberries, overripe and sickly, sun-drenched and glorious. There's an hour long past golden. Tendrils of dusk creep, pipistrelles sweep overhead, screaming above a dank, misty river. Waxing moon rises vibrant and thrumming with harvest heartbeat. Gold shards skitter and stumble, cornflower turning to navy, sunset gleaming, waning. The cows across the water meadow low for honey-sweet hay, mothers and mangers. Juice drips and sticks down chins and fingers. The soft breeze brings promises of blackberries. What's going on with that, John?
Love that.
It's like being transported into a perfect British countryside scene.
It is.
Isn't it? In late September. It's harvest time.
It is. And speaking of, it reminds me a little bit of John Keats' Autumn.
Right. Are you saying she copied it off that? That's a bit rubbish, isn't it? Poppy, come on. Honestly. Hey, that's high praise.
No, but it's got that feel to it. It's really nice that. Speaking of lyrical, that's...
Yeah.
That's got such lovely music to it, hasn't it?
I like the fruit references at the start and the end.
Yeah.
Almost like they're so close and personal and like happening. And then in the middle, we kind of zoom out to the full scene.
Yes.
I think it's a good way of kind of bringing it all back in.
Back to the juice.
Yeah, chins and fingers and all that business. Yeah.
I really like the sort of little half rhymes as well. Strawberries and glorious.
Yeah, they belong together. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. And then we come on to the final one. I think this, for me, is head and shoulders the best that we've had in.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It's got
everything.
Sure, but just amazingly, amazingly written.
And who's written this one, Tom?
Does it say? Oh, it's me. Yeah. I wrote this one. The best of the bad times. The silence, stale, breathed in with a tick and out with a tock. The patter of undecipherable Morse on the window pane. It's raining again, I said with flimsy tut and frown, pretending the weather's let us down. It's raining, she heard, but couldn't muster a reply. No going out today, I declared with a polyester cloak of sadness covering my glee. No going out, she heard, with a stare into the distance far and of long ago. I'll pop the kettle on, yeah, and stay for a while. I'll pop the kettle on, unearth the hint of a smile.
It's very nice, Tommy. It's verging on story.
Yeah.
It's very good. Is that inspired by a particular moment in your life, Tom?
No, it really isn't, but I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know why. Yeah, no. No, it's not in answer to your question. I just like playing with... I like playing with scenarios like that.
Mm.
It did make me think. I had a little thought earlier, as if I need another writing task to take on. But been interesting to write a little anthology, wouldn't it? That's just about putting the kettle on.
It would.
Because I was thinking that's where it came from originally, was the idea of putting the kettle on, was the water link, really, rather than the rain that turned up later on. But such a British thing, isn't it, putting the kettle on? Like,
it is, yeah.
Oh, your entire family's been killed in a freak yachting accident. Oh, I'll put the kettle on.
Yeah.
As much as random person pops round to measure up your blinds, I'll put the kettle on.
Yeah, that's right. It is a response to everything, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think you could probably kind of work that into various inappropriate, appropriate, sad, happy things.
I like it.
You know, you bring young teen girl brings new boyfriend round and it's all a bit awkward until
the
dad
kettle
says
goes
I'll
on.
Put the kettle on. And then that's like, oh, everything's all right.
That's nice. Hey, that reminds me actually, Tom.
Hmm.
In the Rand household now, we have a new word for a brew.
Right.
And I thought you might like it because it's literary as well. It's a literary joke.
Okay.
We say, would you like a cup of Truman?
Right.
Does that, any ideas? Any thoughts? Nice cup of Truman.
Oh, cup of tea.
Yeah.
Capote.
It's quite nice, isn't it?
Capote.
Nice capote.
Yeah.
That's definitely going in the Failing Writers Dictionary, along with enthrising.
Yeah. What happens if you don't want tea? Do you ask them if they want a coffee? No. I'd mess that up. What happens?
An anan.
Anan. Do you ask them if they don't want a cup of tea? Do you ask them if they want anan?
That's quite confusing, though, isn't it? Asking someone if they want anan. Do you mean bread? Do you mean my grandmother? But yeah. So there you go. Well, Tom, poetry, eh?
Yeah.
Wow.
I can't believe that bit about the tea and coffee actually made the edit. That's unbelievable, isn't it? But it's been that kind of episode, hasn't it? It's been very different.
It's really been literally a rambling episode.
It's been a journey, John. And that's what people talk about, isn't it? A journey.
That's right.
That's what it's all about.
That's what people like, isn't it? They like the journey.
Been on a journey.
Well, should we wrap that journey up now? I mean, I know that life goes on and the journey continues, but for now, we do actually have to end this episode at some point.
Yeah.
Let's cut to rambling, Tom and John, then. To take us out.
It's just started raining. That wasn't on the books, was it?
It wasn't in the plan.
No.
Look, Tommy, a curlew.
Yeah.
Look at it. walking along the wall.
With its silly long legs.
And its big silly beak.
Curly beak. So what, were we halfway between stones now, do you think? A couple of miles?
So I don't know how disappointing this is going to be for you, but there aren't any more stones.
What?
We've done the stones.
Is there not another one?
No, that's it. Oh. The next one is miles away.
Right, I don't like the sound of that.
No, we're not going to them. No, we're heading for the Bronte Falls.
Right.
So this is more of your Bronte-themed section of the tour.
Oh, right, okay. Well, it's probably time to say goodbye, isn't it?
Yeah, it probably is. See you later, everybody.
What's Dave doing, John?
Oh, I don't mind him. He's been on this this new subliminal advertising course.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah.
Plot and plan with ease with Scrivener.
It is a bit weird.
Yeah, a bit.
Buy Scrivener to help you structure whatever you're writing.
And quite annoying as well, isn't it?
Buy me a pint.
Seriously, Dave?
I know, as if that's going to work.
Talk like a squirrel.
It's stupid. It really is, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? As if.
Scrivener, the tippity-top writing software that helps you every step of the way with whatever you're writing. Get 20% off by using the code FAILING at literatureandlatte.com.
Do you fancy a latte, John?
Yeah, do you know what? I could murder a latte right now. Could I have some of that hazelnut syrup in it as well, please?
Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?